Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome. We're live in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina with the one, the only, Scarycast. We've got an incredible show, as we normally do, lined up for you. I'd like to first introduce our panelists for tonight. First of all, the Surgeon General of Scarycast, Dr. Trey Donaway. How are you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing fine, John. I'm happy to be here with the whole gang. If Robin gets here, we're all here.
That is exactly right. But if not, we will represent her well, won't we?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And our man from West Hollywood, the one and only Devin Tate. How are you doing tonight, Devin?
Hey, John, I'm doing great. You know, I talked to you on the phone earlier, and I was out walking around enjoying the beautiful day, and I had my mask off for a while. So that was the first time I've been outside without a mask for over 13 months.
Wow, that's
Devin,
that's
I just read where L.A. had zero deaths recently, and that's the first time that's been in for a long time.
I saw that, too, and it's definitely good news.
That's great.
Well, we're glad you're part of the good news, Devin. You're not dead. That was
not yet. Come on, man.
I'm sorry. And speaking of come on, man, that nasty remark, the one and only, one of my best friends in the world that will not let me get by with a nasty remark, the amazing Velvet.
Nope.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I'm ready for the show, and I'm ready to jump in feet first.
Well, we are glad that you are. Tonight, the subject is vampires, and the guest is the one and only, one of the best-known authors in paranormal literature, and one of the nicest people that I've ever met, from Roswell, New Mexico. What a great kicker. John LeMay, how are you doing tonight, John?
I'm doing great, guys. And even though we're going to talk about vampires, I just kind of wanted to ask everyone, have you all noticed how often they've been pushing UFOs in the news lately? Has everyone noticed that?
Oh, yeah.
It is just nonstop.
And have you noticed that the Kardashians claim to see a UFO? Do you not find that odd?
I think they
no.
were from a different planet and when they arrived here. So that's not odd.
Yeah.
I truly think the reason why I don't even think the Kardashians saw a UFO. I think they just said they saw it. And I think the Kardashians is just the way they're reaching people who don't watch the news, because they know people who don't watch the news probably watch the Kardashians. So I say, what are the odds they saw a UFO? You know, and then what are the odds that after all these years of silence, the government's releasing everything? Does anybody think something funny's going on? I mean, with everything else funny in the world, don't you find that odd?
I would think if you do have UFOs, they are super intelligent, and they would not be hanging around with the Kardashians if they were indeed super intelligent.
Yeah.
I mean, the UFO, they come out of the spaceship and say, okay, let's go back, nothing to see here, and they'd be gone.
Yeah.
Trey,
unless
that's
they
the
left
funniest
them here
thing
on
I've heard in years. I'm going to be spreading that word everywhere.
No, I mean, they could have left them here
I just
on purpose, you know.
Yeah, when does that report come out? The long-anticipated report that you know it's going to have all this hype, and it's going to get there, and it's not going to have anything in it. You just know that's going to happen.
I don't know. This year might be different. But, you know, that was the thing, for those that don't know, that Dr. Trey was talking about, that was in the COVID release bill. That's what that was in. Hidden in there was this thing about how the government has to reveal X amount of information on UFOs come June. So that'll be next month if we get there.
Yep. I tell you. Well, I'm looking at an article right now. In I'm quoting from the 1915 edition of the New York, and UFOs have been getting a lot of very compelling press lately. In April of last year, the U.S. Navy officially released 3 videos, blah, blah, blah. It's just nonstop. You can't find any news feed that does not have UFO stories in it. So, interesting. Of course,
they
can't scream about Trump as much, and COVID's going away, so they're looking for something to sell newspapers with, although it's not newspapers anymore, really, I guess.
Yeah, it's clicks. Now it's clicks.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just wanted to plant that conspiracy theory in y'all's head, so when you see the UFOs on the news, you can kind of be thinking about it, But yeah, as John said, I got a new book out. It's called Classic Monsters Unmade. Nothing to do with UFOs. It's all the old classic Dracula, Frankenstein, Wolfman, Mummy movies that they didn't make. You know, they wrote scripts for them, and then something would happen, and they didn't get made. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was real funny. I was looking through that this morning. And you called me, and I said, John, you've got a script for this sequel to Dracula. I said, my goodness, this is the most amazing thing. And you know, the most amazing thing we can find on ScaryCast is a John LeMay report of a sequel to Dracula. So why don't you tell us about this? I mean, this is one of the most earth-shattering things. I mean, really and truly, as a big Dracula fan, I love this. And I just can't believe that we didn't hear about it before now. But thanks to you, we have got a report on it on ScaryCast. So the floor, sir, is yours.
All right. Well, I just want to give credit where credit's due. I think the author's name is Tom Weaver. Tom Weaver wrote a book on Son of Dracula, and he included this treatment in the back of his book for this Dracula sequel written in 1939 that never got produced. And what it did, it ignored the events of Dracula's Daughter, because if you'll recall, there was a sequel to Dracula called Dracula's Daughter that did not have Dracula or Bela Lugosi in it. It actually just had a wax dummy of Bela Lugosi that gets lit on fire, and that's how they destroyed Dracula's body and Dracula's daughter. But the sequel totally ignores that. It actually really retcons a lot of the 1931 Dracula, which actually turns 90 years old this year. I didn't even think about that. So I guess it's appropriate we're talking about Dracula 90 years later. But the sequel was written by a guy named Manly P. Hall, who John and I will talk a little bit about later because it's really interesting. And Manly P. Hall was a friend of Bela Lugosi's, and he wanted Lugosi to come back as Dracula because, you know, poor old Lugosi, he needed work. He didn't get the respect that he deserved when it came to those old horror films. Universal never wanted to pay him what he was worth. Just a lot of bad luck for Bela Lugosi. So his friend Manly Hall decided he'd write his own sequel for Lugosi, and it takes place right after Dracula ends, and somebody comes along and takes the stake out of Dracula's heart, and he comes back to life, only it's like 30 years later. And so Dracula wants revenge on, you know, all the people from the last movie that, you know, staked him. And one of them is, what's the girl's name in the movie? I can't remember. There's John Seward. And then I'm trying to think, Mina. I think Mina is the
female Harker.
Lead's name.
Yeah, Mina Harker.
Yeah, that's her. Yeah, Mina Harker. So she's gone to South America to hide. That's how far away she tries to get just in case Dracula ever comes back to life. And lo and behold, he does. And tracks her down to South America and basically exacts his revenge on her and turns her into a vampire. And then once I think she has to get staked, and then he goes after her son and his girlfriend, and she kind of becomes the new damsel of distress. And it's just a repeat of the first movie, basically in South America. And the treatment doesn't really end very conclusively. it kind of has Dracula getting away on a ship and sailing away, so I don't think the author really finished it. John, did you read that treatment? Because I know I sent it to you. Did you get a chance to read it?
I did, and at the very end, they were mulling around on the dock, and they were shooting at the boat, and Dracula was standing there, and the sun was setting, and he went down below board, and obviously he went into his coffin, and that's what happened. I mean, it's a lot like, if you think about it, it's a lot like the Lord of the Rings. You know, they all get on the boat, and they sail off into the sunset. I mean, what's really bad is I have a treatment for what happens when they come back, and God knows they end up in Myrtle Beach.
So you work that
know.
Quick, huh?
Do what?
You work that quick, huh?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, I did. I mean, I thought it was great. I just love the fact that they all get on the boat and they head on off. So thanks to a major hurricane, they come up at the Mayor Baba Institute, and their ship comes, and all of a sudden they don't have driver's licenses or anything, and we can't do anything for them, and we have to try to figure out what to do with these people that are obviously icons and gods of, well, fantasy. And you know, what do you do with them? You can't do anything with them. You can't put them in a car. I mean, so yes, that's the treatment. We got that, and it's probably not going to go anywhere, but it was a lot of fun writing, so there you go.
What did I leave anything out from that treatment that you found interesting, though, John, about Dracula going to South America?
Well, not really. I mean, the whole thing was we finally realized that the old lady is Mina Harker. Now, what I don't understand is where's Jonathan? Jonathan Harker. Because Jonathan Harker
was
a big deal.
Yeah, he died.
Well,
he died off screen or something.
Did he really? We don't know. You see, what's nice about fantasy is you can bring people back, and you can always have a reason to bring them back. I'm giving away some of the writers, some of the tricks that they pull. But, you know, we don't know about Jonathan. He might come back in the next one. But it was really a good story. I mean, I think it just followed the lines of, you know, we're up in Transylvania and all this stuff goes on. And Dracula gets staked. And then now we're back in Rio de Janeiro. And what's interesting is there's a lot of stuff about the Nazis in Rio de Janeiro. Now, there really is. So that's one thing that I picked up on. There could be a lot of there could be some future things if someone would really get into this treatment that Manly Hall wrote. I mean, there could be some good things that would happen. But that's
now that's
just me.
An interesting connection that you just came up with. But it was written, you know, before World War II ended. It was written, I think, in 1939. But that is an interesting note that you've got the evil Eastern. Or not evil Eastern, evil European that travels to South America. That is an interesting parallel that I never thought of. And now I wish I would have put that in the book.
Well, but, you know, maybe the Nazis said, okay, this isn't working out. Where do we go? And then somebody said, well, you know, Dracula went to South America. And they said, hey, there's an idea.
Yeah, that could be.
But it might not be. It's just hard to tell.
Yeah, and really what's more interesting
is... it might be.
Yeah.
it might be. Well, let me back up a second, because I'm not up on my vampire movies. So the original Dracula came out in 31 or so? 30,
that's correct.
Early
yeah, 31.
30s. And at the end of that movie, and I know I've seen it, but I don't remember how it ends. They didn't, like, burn him. They just put a stake through his heart and said, well, that took care of him?
Exactly, Trey. And the reason for that is because sensors back then would allow virtually nothing. So they couldn't even show him getting staked. You could just hear it, and that was it.
Did they somebody say he was staked, and then they said, well done, and he says, no, it was rare?
That would have been
okay,
a good ending.
He was staked, so that took care of him. And they didn't do anything else to him. They didn't like burn him or anything else.
Mm-mm.
So because he
no.
is immortal, all he has to do is have the stake removed, and he's back and kicking and flying and being a vampire.
Yeah. Now, by contrast, the
okay.
hammer Draculas were way more fun when it came to killing Dracula. He got burned up in the sunlight. He got struck by lightning one time. He fell backwards onto a really sharp cross one time.
Uh-huh.
They came up with the coolest ways to kill Dracula in the Hammer movies, but not in
maybe,
not
maybe
really
I'm
in the
confusing the original with the Hammer movie, because I do remember Dracula frying in, you know, sunlight in the morning. The sun comes up and he sizzles and then he turns into dust, and that's the end of Dracula.
Yeah, that was
okay.
Hammer.
So he, this guy was just staked, and then somebody pulls a stake out, and he's back and running.
Yep, and that's exactly what they do in House of Frankenstein. Dracula finally comes back in that movie in the old Universal series, and he's actually played by John Carradine. I don't know why Bela Lugosi didn't come back for that one, but that's all they do is take the stake out of his heart, and he's good to go again.
Takes a licking and keeps on ticking. That's really
hey,
that's really
how's
funny.
You going?
Oh my god,
that's true. Kit takes a licking and keeps on ticking. I mean, he really does with the wrong star, but we love John Carradine. He was great. So
yeah, but
so
really,
John,
the more interesting thing about that screenplay though was who wrote it, which was Manly P. Hall. Pretty significant. I don't know what you'd even call him. He was into a lot of different stuff. And John, you can tell your perspective on it, because I know you talked to his foundation or whatever today. But how I would describe him is one of those new age occult spiritualists that really emerged in the 1920s. That's how I would describe him, and that was kind of his religious sphere was just kind of occult type stuff. So I guess it's not too hard to believe that he would have struck up a friendship with Dracula actor Bela Lugosi.
Oh, they were good buddies, and it turns out that Manly Hall actually spoke over 8,000 times worldwide. He made a fortune talking about the occult and the paranormal, and actually got an interview with, now what is the guy's name? His name is Greg Salyers, Dr. Greg Salyers, who's the president of the Manly Hall Foundation. He's going to be coming on ScaryCast to tell everything he knows about Manly P. Hall. And he was just an interesting character. He really was. And Amazing Velvet, I've got a shocker for you. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. There's a lady there named Amanda who's in charge of the fulfillment of all the books. She turns out to be one of the biggest she's as big of a wrestling fan as Malcolm.
No, good Lord.
So that's right. So she is actually booked now for the Pro Wrestling Interviews podcast right after we do our Carolina Wrestling Hall of Fame inductions.
Nice.
It just doesn't get any crazier. She loves wrestling, and she's part
cool.
of it. And so she's hooked me up with Greg Salyer, who's the head of it. And let's put it this way: Manly Hall is an interesting character. He's done a lot of interesting things, whatever you can say, but he actually filled up Carnegie Hall with the largest number of people in a non-musical event ever. So he was very popular in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. And he's a name that we really don't know. So we're going to bring him to the fore. We're going to talk about him. He's an interesting historical figure.
So, John, I've got another historical figure I think we could compare him to. Who here knows the name Jack Parsons?
I do.
You do? Tell us your slap on
Jack Parsons.
I don't.
Who's Jack Parsons?
Well, I know a little bit. I believe he has to do with JPL, the technology and science laboratory out here in Pasadena, California.
Yes, and what's even weirder, he was a scientist. He's into science. He was literally a rocket scientist. But he was also an occult spiritualist. And I think talking about the UFOs earlier got me into the conspiracy theory part of my brain, because this is a really cool story. And you can look this up later. I'm not making it up. I might misremember some details, but I think it was probably the late 1930s or early 1940s. Jack Parsons, I kid you not, attempted to open a portal to hell. And
that is true. Yes, I've read
that.
He
was trying to summon specifically the Whore of Babylon incarnate. Like, he believed that could be like a real tangible entity that could come through this portal. But this is what I think is funny. The entity that he spoke with, its name was Hilaron. And this next part, that nobody get offended. It's just a funny little piece of trivia. Okay, it's just a little piece of trivia. Don't anybody get offended. So he talks to this demon named Hilaron, which is a female demon. And 9 months later, Hillary Clinton was born. That's a true story. That is a true story. It might just be a coincidence, but
that's
true.
Funny.
Y'all didn't see that coming, did
that's
you?
Funny.
But then
I did.
Might
I did.
Not
I,
be a coincidence.
I thought this has to be the way it is. And
Hillary.
Yeah, do a little Googling. Any listeners that think that was embellished, just Google it and you'll find it. But, you know, it's still,
attention.
You know, it's scary. So, you know, this is scary cast and that's pretty scary. So.
Yes.
Well, that would explain some things.
Yeah.
It could be true. It could be.
So, Alon, the minute you said that, I knew what was coming. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, anyways, but back to the movie monsters instead of the real monsters. So, we could play a game where y'all just ask me something about your, like, favorite Universal monster movie, and maybe I can tell you, like, an unmade story or an unmade movie related to it.
Okay, I've got one. I love
okay.
The Creature from the Black Lagoon. Was there
Ooh,
ever
that's based
really
on a true story, John.
What?
Okay, not a true story, but it's based on a true legend. This is a really
a
cool
legend.
Story, too.
Okay.
So the screenwriter of that movie, his name is William Allen. He was a guest at Orson Welles' house while they were shooting Citizen Kane. A bunch of different people were there. One of them was a cinematographer from South America. I think his last name was I can't remember what his name was. But so they were just making regular dinner time conversation. And the South American cinematographer, he was telling them that in the Amazon River, there was a fish man who would come out of the river, and he would abduct a maiden once a year. And once he did that, he would leave the villagers alone. And he was really serious. He was trying to convince everyone at the dinner party that this was a real creature that actually existed and that some people had even gotten photographs of it. Well, anyways, William Allen, you know, he tucked that away in his brain. And I think about 10 years later, he finally wrote a screenplay, and he just called it The Sea Monster, which was, you know, an early version of Creature from the Black Lagoon. So that's your odd trivia for that one, is that, you know, it might be based on a real myth. And actually, it is, because my other book I'm working on right now is all about myths and legends and cryptids from South America. And there's a lot of, like, I wouldn't say Gilman legends, but there's lots of legends of, like, mermen and mermaids in South America that maybe could have, you know, inspired the story. I don't know.
Well, oh, now, if you want to talk about mermaids, I need to hook you up with my friend from Toronto, Robin, and I can't remember her last name, but I've got her number. And she has a story that how her father, when they came back from Vietnam, they captured in their nets a baby mermaid, and the mermaids, the mother and the father, ended up following the ship, and they made such a spectacle of it that they finally let the young, very pretty mermaid girl go. And so maybe you need to talk to her. I think she'd be glad to talk to you about this. It's a wonderful story. It doesn't really fit in with anything that I do. I mean, she's got the story. She's got my story of the lizard men in Vietnam, and I've got that in the book that's coming out. But you might want to talk to her about this. It's an interesting story, and it happened to her grandfather.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, and you see, so that everybody knows, this is how John and I work together. I mean, we want to share stories, and if this is going to be part of a book that he's writing, that's great. And if it's not, well, so what? But I'll get you in touch with her name is Robin Moonshadow, and I will give you her number.
Cool.
And I will call her up and tell her that John LeMay is going to call her, and that'll be great. I think it would be wonderful. She's by the way, she's such a nice lady, but I got to warn you, you better have 4 or 5 hours ready. Terrible of me. It's kind of like talking to the Amazing Velvet.
Hey, watch it.
I know. We're terrible. But yeah, I'd be glad to share that with you. But my question was, is there really a sequel to The Creature from the Black Lagoon? Is there really a sequel?
You mean like an unmade sequel? Because you saw the two sequels they did make, Revenge of the Creature and Creature Walks Among Us?
Now, I never saw Creature Walks Among Us, but I saw Revenge of the Creature, but I was wondering if there were any sequels that we didn't know about.
Yeah, so I think once they did Creature Walks Among Us, it didn't do very well, and they just weren't interested in doing another sequel, but they were very interested throughout the years in doing remakes, and it's really shocking we haven't done one yet, but there's been probably 3 or 4 different attempts at doing a remake. Now there was, okay, in the 1980s, after E.T. came out, and E.T. was a big hit, William Allen was kind of inspired to think of a sequel, you know, the guy who wrote the original. And I like his little pitch for a sequel was, the Gill Man has a family. He has a wife and some kids. I know it sounds funny, but again, this was after E.T. So I think he was thinking, oh, how can we make a cute creature movie with, like, creature babies? And I think the story was supposed to be kind of similar to E.T. The creatures live in a lake, and some family settles near the lake, and they make friends with the kids, and then, you know, some bad guy wants to capture the little creatures. And, you know, I think it sounded like a fun little sequel, but I guess Universal must not have been interested in it. Well, that's one example, but I think all the other ones were basically just remakes that they never got around to. In fact, what's it called? The Shape of Water was supposed to just be a Creature from the Black Lagoon movie, and I don't know why they didn't make it an actual official creature movie, because that is what it basically is. What's so funny is that movie won Best Picture the year it came out, whenever that was. And so the Best Picture winner of the Academy Awards started out as a Creature from the Black Lagoon movie. How weird is that?
Wow.
Yeah, that's what it was. Amazing.
Well, I have a question. Sorry, John. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Devin.
The last movie I saw in the theater way back before the pandemic was the remake or the new version of Invisible Man, which I think is sometimes considered a universal monster, the original Invisible Man. So I went back and watched the original black and white movie, and it was so funny and so different from the current new remake. So I don't know much about if there's anything in between or any other movies, but it was very, very different, you know, the new version from the old version.
Yeah, so Universal made quite a few Invisible Man movies throughout the 1940s, basically because they were cheap. You know, you didn't have to do a guy up in makeup to be Frankenstein or the Wolfman. So all you had to do is I think what they would do is they would have him dress in like a black velvet full body suit, and like he'd have like the suit coat on, you know, and he would walk in front of a black screen in the suit coat, and then they would just rip the suit coat off and put it over a different image, and it gave him the impression that, you know, you're watching an invisible man. So I guess it was fairly easy for him and didn't cost too much money. There weren't a lot of unmade sequels to that one. What there was the very first Invisible Man movie went through a ton of different screenplay revisions. I know in the original first screenplay, it was written by the great director of Bride of Frankenstein, James Whale. And his screenplay, what it is the guy, he's not the Invisible Man yet. He's just he's a normal man whose face has been badly scarred. And he's a scientist, and he wants to turn invisible because he's so hideous to look at. And it's kind of an odd script because it combines science with supernaturalism, because he basically sells his soul to the devil to be able to create this invisibility serum. So there's a spiritual component, whereas the finished film it's entirely scientific. You know what I mean? So that's how the first version of that differed. And let's see. Now, in terms of unmade sequels, though, you know, there's Abbott and Costello Meet the Invisible Man, which is a really great movie. And I hear that it started out as just a regular Invisible Man sequel about a invisible boxer. And then they decided, let's just throw Abbott and Costello into it and make it an Abbott and Costello movie. And I don't know if that's true, but it's an interesting story.
Okay. And
what,
we're all waiting for your comment. Yes, Velvet? Say that again.
I said, wasn't Chevy Chasen one like in the 80s?
Yeah, I forgot about that one. I don't even remember what it's called, but yeah, that sounds right.
I don't
right.
either. Yeah. I remember that one. It was just goofy because he was in it.
Yeah. John, I thought of something before we get too far off topic and the time gets away from us. Do you still want to tell your story about hanging out with Bela Lugosi the Fourth, or no?
Oh gosh. So we'll get into that. Let's finish up with any questions for John LeMay.
Okay.
And then I've got two books and a manuscript to talk about that are just going to be absolutely frightening. But and I'd forgotten about them. You know, it's funny, you get on Scarycast, you forget about things and it becomes a lot of fun. So do we have any more questions for John LeMay and potentially unmade monster films and or the Universal Monsters? And do we have any more? Everybody's being very quiet. Somebody pipe up. Okay. I guess we don't have any more questions for John LeMay. Now we've got some interesting things. I guess, first of all, and I talked with Dr. Trey Donaway, and I said, did I mention that? Sometimes it's harder for me to remember what I've talked about. He said, yes, you did. Well, I did want to mention that when we talk about vampires, we've got the Lugosi family, and it's one of the most incredible families in history. And I can say that the greatest Saturday afternoon of my life, I had met William Bela Lugosi IV. and he had a license plate of Undead 2, and it was Florida. He had a black Mustang. It was great. And we sat there and we watched Plan 9 from Outer Space. And all he could talk about was how much the Lugosi family hated Ed Wood, because Ed Wood went back to Bella. Bella was a nobody at that point. He was in his 80s, and he brought him back to life in this thing called Glenn or Glenda, I Changed My Sex. And I don't know if you've seen it or not. It's about the worst film ever made. So you've got that. And then it comes Bride of the Monster. Bride of the Monster, not a great film, starring Bela Lugosi, and Ed Wood was thrilled. And then he had the idea to cast Bela Lugosi into Plan 9 from Outer Space. And it was a great idea, because Bela Lugosi was going to be a monster who was from outer space. And there were flying, just crazy looking flying saucers flying all over the place, all over Hollywood. The only problem was that Bela died. And he had his Bela's chiropractor to play Bela for the last couple of scenes until he could just get. In fact, I think the chiropractor played Bela for the rest of the movie. But the whole point is, that was probably one of his most successful films. Wade Williams from Kansas ended up buying it for about $5,000. He bought that film, made more money than anyone ever made. He wouldn't even let me show it in Myrtle Beach. You know, I was going to pay him $10,000. He wouldn't even let me. He just, you know, he made a fortune on it, so it was great. So, and he was a big Bela Lugosi fan. So what happened was, and this is the story back in, let me go back to the late 80s, and that's a long time ago, and I'm dating myself. I had a business called T-Shirt City of Clemson, and I was such a Dracula fan. And I found out that you had to call up Bela Lugosi Jr., who was an attorney, and he wasn't a very nice guy. But what he did was he charged you to print shirts with his father's image on it. So I called him up. I said, I want to do it. I want to do a couple thousand. He said, here's what I'll do. If you send me a check for $5,000 and it clears, you can print whatever you want for a month. And I said, okay, great. So I did that. My dad, I convinced him to do that. You know, my dad was a nice guy. I can't believe he was such a nice guy. So we sent Bela Lugosi a check. I knew the check was going to clear. And so he called me up. He said, your check cleared. You can print. I said, well, thank you, sir. And we developed a little bit of a phone friendship in the late 80s, because he was surprised that someone would actually send him a check that would clear. So, you know, we talked a little bit, and I heard a lot about his dad, and it was a lot of fun. So we get to, and let me get the date, 1992. We get to 1992, and Bela Jr. calls me up. He says, my grandson is going to be coming up there, and I know you, and I know you're an honorable guy. And if he has a problem, I want him to call you, and you can help him out. I said, oh, so he's a mess? He said, absolutely. I said, okay, great. Huh. So one Sunday morning at about 7:30, I got a phone call, which was kind of odd. It said, this is Bela Lugosi. And I remembered that conversation. It happened about a month ago. I said, well, hey, how's it going? He said, well, I've got car problems. And my grandfather said that if I had a problem over here, because I'm up here from Florida, to give you a call. I said, well, sure. I mean, I think your granddad's great. I think your great-granddad's incredible. He said, yeah, I know. I don't want to hear it. So I drove to Greenville, South Carolina, and I gave him some money to fix his car. He said, well, what am I going to do now? I said, well, where are you going? He said, I'm going to see some girl, but I don't know, and I just need a place to stay. And at that point, I said, well, sure, come on up to my place. I was kind of excited. So he came on up to Winston-Salem, North Carolina, to my condo, and we kind of became friends. I don't know about the girl. Maybe he was talking to her online or whatever, but we became pretty good friends. He actually stayed there for about 10 months. And in month nine, now who's laughing? Is that Trey?
That's Trey. So he just stayed there for 10 months.
I'm sorry, say that again.
He just stayed for 10 months.
No, about 9 months.
Nine months.
We hung out. Listen, I know his family. I know he's a famous guy. We watched Plan 9 from Outer Space several times. We actually wrote a sequel, and I'm sitting about 3 feet from a copy of not a sequel. Well, I guess it was. It was a sequel from Plan 9 to Outer Space. It's called Plan 10, Vampire Killers from Outer Space. And it takes place in, does anybody know Gaffney, South Carolina? They have a water tower.
The big
that
beach.
Looks like a peach. That's right. And the whole deal is the UFO comes down and it somehow gets into the peach. And that's where it stays. And all the action, it's kind of like a Plan 9 film, but it's based around the peach. So it's called Plan 10, Vampire Killers from Outer Space. He and I wrote it. I've got the whole treatment and everything, and it's wonderful. I don't know that it's that great, but it's a lot of fun. So anyway, he decided he was going to go meet this girl from Cincinnati. He went up, met her, brought her down, and they stayed there for about a month. And then he said, well, we're going to get married. We're going to go back up there. I said, that's great. So that's what they did. And they left. But before that, here's the interesting thing. Right before he went and got her, I came home from work to my condo, and I went to the upstairs. I had a balcony that looked over the living room, and that's kind of like where I hung out and had a drink and whatever. So I'm standing there, and I smelled sulfur. And I was shocked because he always joked and talked about the Church of Satan. And he was in the downstairs bedroom, which we had converted into a den. And I walked in. I said, what's up? He said, not much. And I said, did you join the Church of Satan? And he said, how did you know? I said, well, I figured it out. You probably need to get out of here. And that's why he decided to go see this girl that he ended up marrying. And they came back for a little bit and went on. But it was frightening. And so here's the true story of what happened. I had this, how can I put it, this Golden Girls style dude that lived next door to me named Roger. He was just always nosy and about everything. And so about a week after Bella left, he came over with some cleaning supplies. He said, there's something wrong. I'm getting a terrible smell in my condo, and I know it's coming from your place. I said, well, where's it coming from? He said, and he looked around. He said, it must be coming from under your stairwell. And I said, oh, my God, I wonder what that is. So he walked in there, and there was no smell. And he got really mad. And I walked over there, and there was a horrible, horrible stench right near there. And I said, did you ever hang out with my roommate, Bella? He said, well, yeah. We used to hang out a lot. And I thought, oh, my goodness. He may have made a mistake by hanging out with a dude that was a member of the Church of Satan. So that's the story.
I stick by it. I know it happened. The Church of Satan is not something anyone needs to join, I don't believe. And so that's my story. And John LeMay, I know you like to have the story on recording, so there's the story about my deal with Bela Lugosi, the fourth Undead 2, and him going up and getting his girlfriend, and they came back for a little bit, and that was it. So, yeah, kind of a crazy story, but it happened. And I did teach him how to play keyboard.
Where was the smell coming from,
John? The smell was coming from especially, it was kind of all over the house, but especially the den that we had created from the large bedroom downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know, but it was absolutely a mess. And so, and I guess what else I've got tonight, I found a book. It's a very famous occult book called Vampires Among Us by Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and she's passed away. But what she talks about, and if people aren't familiar with it, is there are two kinds of vampires. There are vampires that drink blood, and there are spiritual vampires that suck your energy. And apparently there are a lot of spiritual vampires.
I've met some of those.
Oh, really? Where were they?
Oh, I've met some of those. I've had patients that have been like that. Mm.
Gotcha. So what I'll say is it's a famous book, and I bought it a long, long time ago when it came out. This is actually the first edition, and I'm pleased to have it here. Now, the last thing that I want to talk about is I have a new friend. I have lots of friends. And this one sent me a copy of the Vampire Bible. I don't know if anyone knew this or not, but in Washington State, there's a group of people that subscribe to the Vampire Bible. And they talk about all kinds of interesting things, like the fact that we're going to go through an apocalypse and the vampires are going to, like, suck all the blood out of everybody, and that's what's going to be all left. So there really are a lot of people that believe in vampires. I guess in New Orleans and Washington State, that's where the most of them are. So, yes, John, we have lots of interesting vampire things. I think that's all I'll talk about now, but if anyone, jwstamey@gmail.com, just give me an email, and I'll be glad to talk with you about it. So I'm gonna turn the program back over to John LeMay because you're the one that got me talking about the vampire stuff.
Man, I don't know how to follow that. That was pretty heavy.
Yeah, that's a tough act to follow, John. I mean, I only have about a bazillion questions about the vampires now.
Well, start asking at least a couple of them. I mean, my goodness.
The vampire. Now, have you seen a copy of the Vampire Bible?
I've got it right here.
Is there a central belief system in the Vampire Bible? What is it? What principles did they espouse in this Bible? And is the name of it actually the Vampire Bible, or is it like some vampire-ish name book?
No, it's called the Vampire Bible. It has a trademarked logo that they don't want you to mess around with. It's like it's like a vampire bat in front of the moon. It's called Vampire. I tell you what, Dr. Trey, you and I get to meet sometimes. I will bring you a copy of it.
Well, when was it published? Did Gutenberg, after he did the Bible, he said, hey, I got this order from the Vampire Bible, too, so I'm going to do. How long has it been around?
Well, I'm looking to see what the copyright date is. Well, it doesn't even have a copyright date. But I think
you know what, it has something to do with Twilight, because it came from Washington.
Well,
right?
Maybe.
Is Twilight set in Washington?
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, oh, wait, here it is. Yeah, Lacey, Washington, website is vampiretemple.com, and they talk about, ninth copyright, 1989.
So this is the modern edition. There's no previous edition. There's no ancient scripture version of the Vampire Bible.
Not that I have, but I feel very lucky that a friend of mine got me a copy of this, and he's going to be buying some more Vampire Temple books, and he's going to get me copies of them because they send them in PDFs. So it'll be something.
They've changed with the times.
I think they have. How's that? I mean, just I don't subscribe to it, but I'll tell you what, it's kind of weird and crazy. So I've got a copy, and I know I can at least get a copy to Scary Cast co-hosts. How's that,
John? John, does yours say Temple of the Vampire?
Temple of the Vampire.
Okay.
John, have you ever heard that the reptilians are supposed to be like the original vampires, and that like ties in with them somehow?
Now, I have heard that, but just once or twice. The only reptilians that I know come from David Icke, who really has a bead on all this. I've got a couple of his books. Would you like to tell us a little more about that?
I can't remember the exact details, but, you know, there's people who believe that there's a connection between the reptilians and all the elites, you know, all the ultra wealthy royalty, stuff like that. You know, the, a lot of rumors about them drinking blood and something about them being related to the reptilians. It's just interesting.
Well, it really is. And you hear about it a lot. You hear about it enough that you kind of wonder about it, but maybe
not
so much.
I don't know if proof is the right word, but the only example that has been, that everybody knows about, is Countess Elizabeth Bathory. She really did used to bathe in blood, apparently, because she felt it was rejuvenative. So, I mean, there's her, and she's the only one. But sometimes you have to wonder, was she the only one who got caught? Maybe a lot of them believed that and did that. It's just, who knows?
Well, I mean, I know we have these rumors about things called Pizzagate. Does everybody know about that rumor?
Yes, Pizzagate. Back to the 9-month phenomenon there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say, back to Hilleron.
Yes.
Hilleron, okay. Yeah, and we don't know. We have no clue. But there are interesting rumors that go back to a long time ago, and even a longer time ago. When I say a long time ago, around maybe the 40s and Hillary, and maybe back. So we don't know. But
well, you know,
with
Devin right there in Hollywood, maybe he'll see Prince Harry out, like, you know, at the grocery store or something, and he could ask him the questions about, you know, does royalty bathe in blood for whatever reason? Gosh, what an icebreaker that would be! Hey, aren't you
right?
Aren't you Prince Harry? Yes. Hey, I got a question. I was talking to a bunch of friends the other night, and I got this question about vampires and bathing in blood is royalty. Yeah.
Right?
It could happen. It could happen.
What can we say?
You know,
it could.
I think that
it could.
That
it
big
could
rumor.
We can only hope. We can only hope.
I feel like the, like, what would I call it, like big national rumors, like, or conspiracy theories, they're no different than small town rumors. You know, like in a small town, you hear that a couple's having trouble and they're having an affair, and they always deny it, but, like, you see the writing on the wall, you know, you see them with other people, even though they always deny it, and it's like, I think that you know, that rumor's probably true. I kind of feel that way about a lot of the bigger rumors and conspiracy theories, just like our own, you know, Roswell UFO crash. Because some of the excuses they've come up with to cover up the crash are so dumb. Like one time they tried to claim that the alien bodies were just crash test dummies, and it's like, do you really think the ranchers were so stupid they couldn't tell a flesh and blood body from like a crash test dummy? You know, it's just a lot of times the stories they come up with for the cover-ups are almost more far out than the stories themselves. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but really, when you think about it, we're still dealing with human nature, and it is part of human nature to speculate and to come up with conspiracy theory. I mean, it's just the way it's always been, the way it always will be, and whether it's a little town where rumors fly out through a rumor mill, it's just a bigger mill on a national scale, but the people are still stupid, and people will still believe anything from time to time. So I agree with you. I think it is just the larger scale of it. But the principles are the same. The same principles apply to national rumors versus small-town gossip rumors.
Yeah, and it's just like the parents that tell their kids, they're like, oh, we were just wrestling. And the kids are like,
there you go.
Were you though? What? That didn't seem
but
right.
But wasn't that Hilaron you were wrestling with?
No, Lord. No, thank you. Good Lord.
Oh, we're going to have a show about Hilaron. Oh, that's awesome.
No. Hey, you keep talking like that, you might end up in the Mississippi.
Or maybe the Ashley.
No, that or what's the one up in the Hudson?
Yeah, they wouldn't put me in the Ashley or whatever. Yeah, I understand. Well, it's an interesting thought, and we talked about very interesting topics tonight.
Absolutely,
which are I don't know what to call them, but they're interesting. And John LeMay, why don't you bring us home with just anything you'd like to tell us about the things that we talked about and your research and everything, because you're one of the most interesting guests that we ever have. We're so happy to have you on here the first Monday of every month, and we want you here forever because it's great. So what have you got to tell us to take us home on this?
Oh, I never have a plan for that, John. You know me. I'll just say, you know, if we were supposed to talk about classic monsters all night, you know, we just got off topic. Like last time, didn't I come on to talk about Godzilla or something? And didn't we kind of get off topic again? Just seems to be our habit, huh?
That's far.
You see, that's what happens when we have a great guest, because we start talking and then we just don't stop.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I was thinking, since you're so interested in Creature from the Black Lagoon, did you know that Creature from the Black Lagoon did actually meet Abbott and Costello?
I did not. You just told me I didn't know.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
So what's interesting is they met him before his movie came out, because Abbott and Costello, they had they had their own TV show, and then they were also frequently on the Colgate Comedy Hour. And before Creature from the Black Lagoon came out, they put him in a skit with Abbott and Costello. And they actually sell it on Amazon as Abbott and Costello Meet the Creature from the Black Lagoon. But the sad truth is, it's a 15-minute skit. And it ends with them running into the creature and getting scared, and it ends. So, I mean, it's kind of a non-event. But technically, they did meet him, so that's kind of interesting. And they almost did Abbott and Costello meet King Kong. And that one split into two totally different movies. Abbott and Costello meets King Kong turned into Abbott and Costello Meet Captain Kidd, and also Africa Screams, because you'll remember in Africa Screams, they have a giant ape in it. So that's actually where that came from, was they were thinking about doing Abbott and Costello Meet King Kong, and it was just kind of a leftover idea they threw in there.
And they just tried to do it at the very end of their careers, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, actually, their next to last movie was Abbott and Costello Meet the Invisible Man. And after that, I think they did one more film, and that was it, if I remember right. No, it was Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy. I'm sorry, Abbott and Costello Meets the Mummy was their next to final film. And then they did one more, and that was it for them.
Hmm.
But they certainly made a lot of films. They certainly made a huge amount of money, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of what's like the craziest unmade classic monster movie. They were going to do Godzilla versus Frankenstein. Did you know that?
No. Tell us about that one, if you don't mind.
Well, so it kind of sort of did get made. In 1965, this movie came out called Frankenstein Conquers the World, and it did come from Toho in Japan, and it's got a giant Frankenstein monster. How he turns gigantic is during World War II, the Nazis transport the heart of the Frankenstein monster to Japan, and it just so happens to arrive there when Hiroshima gets bombed. So it's like the bomb irradiates the heart, and it grows into a new gigantic Frankenstein monster. And it's pretty strange. At the same time, this underground dinosaur monster surfaces and starts eating people, and Frankenstein gets blamed for what the dinosaur monster did. So it's like at the end of the movie, he's wrongly accused, and he has to clear his name by fighting the dinosaur monster. The point is, initially, he was just supposed to fight Godzilla, and it was the same basic storyline except for Godzilla. And it was really strange because the American co-producers on that movie said, we don't want him to fight Godzilla because we feel like it takes too much attention away from the Frankenstein monster, which I think is really strange. I would think an American producer would be like, heck yeah, let's do Frankenstein versus Godzilla.
So it's hard to say. So
everybody
got
quiet again.
So they opted for Frankenstein over Godzilla.
Yeah.
And what year was this?
1964. Yeah. And actually, before that, though, it was supposed to be King Kong versus Frankenstein. That was supposed to be a movie. Did we talk about that last episode? I feel like we did.
I don't think we did. Please tell us about that one. That's a new one for all of us, I believe.
Yeah, so in 1958, Willis O'Brien wanted to do a King Kong versus Frankenstein movie. You know, Willis O'Brien animated King Kong. And he just assumed he could do what he wanted with Kong because, you know, he was kind of sort of one of his creators. And when he went to RKO, they basically told him, no, if you want to use your monster, you have to pay us $220,000, which he didn't have. And it's really sad. He got involved with this Hollywood producer named John Beck, who told Willis O'Brien, I'll go out and I'll find a studio that will pay the $220,000 so you can use King Kong. Well, he went to Toho in Japan to see if they wanted to make King Kong versus Frankenstein, and they said, yeah, we'll do it. We'll foot the bill, but we throw out Frankenstein and replace him with Godzilla. And poor Willis O'Brien didn't know anything about this until he read in the papers that King Kong versus Godzilla had finished shooting, and it was produced by, you know, the guy he had handed off his project to, John Beck, and he was like, oh, my gosh, that was my film, and it's dead. And they replaced Frankenstein with Godzilla, and he was actually so upset by it that I think a month later or a couple of weeks later, I think he had a heart attack and he died, and his wife really felt like it was due to the stress and the extreme disappointment he felt from kind of having his dream project stolen from him and just shipped off to Japan where he didn't get to have anything to do with it. But that's how King Kong versus Godzilla came to be, was, you know, King Kong versus Frankenstein.
Wow. I mean, it's like, what do you say? There's nothing you can say. Well, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have one more great story to share with us as we close up here on the Scaringcast?
What's another great story?
So fun. Do what?
Well, again, if anybody's interested that's listening, the book is called Classic Monsters Unmade, and it's only the first volume. There were so many of these, I had to split it into two volumes, but it spans 1899 to 1955, and volume two will be 1956 to probably about the year 2000. I'm working on that one right now, and it'll be mostly unmade hammer projects, which are pretty interesting. Are y'all more Universal fans or Hammer fans out of y'all?
Trey, are you a Hammer or a Universal fan?
Uh-oh.
Well, Trey said he didn't care when he saw it, so.
Amazing Velvet, are you more of a Hammer or a Universal fan?
There's a toss-up. I could go either way. I lean towards Hammer.
Okay, well, I'll lean toward Hammer, too. And Devin, what do you think?
I'd say I'm more familiar with the Universal.
All right, John, we're going to beg you to do one of each. Is that okay?
Sure. And I was thinking, since you like the creature, there's another interesting lost creature film. This one was actually made, and it was kind of just shown underground. So, you know, in Revenge of the Creature, it was shot at this Florida aquarium. And the people at the aquarium were kind of having fun watching the movie being filmed. So the aquarium workers, who had nothing to do with the film other than just watching it being shot every day, they made their own spoof movie of the creature. And they spent like $20 on their own homemade creature costume and wrote a really clever little, like, 20-minute spoof called Return of the Creature. And when the movie was done shooting at the aquarium, they actually invited the cast and crew to watch it, and they showed it to them just on an old 8mm projector, and they loved it. They loved it so much that the publicist wanted to take it back with him to California and show it to the executives just for fun. But apparently everybody who's ever seen it loves it, but the sad thing is it's never had any type of DVD or home video release. It's not even a special feature on the creature DVD, so that's too bad. But it sounds like it'd be a lot of fun to watch. But that's, you know, that's an example of one of the chapters in my book.
Okay. Well, and that's wonderful. I mean, because I'm a big creature fan. I really am. I think the creature from the Black Lagoon. And, John, do you know why I love the creature?
Mm-mm.
Because I'm the biggest fan of his cousin, the Lizard Man.
Oh, I should have guessed that.
I thought he was going to say the Sleestaks from Land of the Lost.
No, I'm such a big fan. I own the trademark, the Lizard Man Festival. I love the Lizard Man. He's my boy. So, I mean, I love that. That's why I like the creature from the Black Lagoon. That's my connection to, to Universal. And so it's wonderful. And, John, I tell you what, it has been an honor, again, having you here. I tell you what, next month, can we come up with a topic and then talk about something else like we always do?
Yeah, well, I think next month we should be able to have my good friend and co-author, Noe Torres. He works for the school system in Texas, so he's just really busy whenever school's in session. So first week in June, he should be able to be with us, and we'll talk about our book, Early American UFOs, and how UFOs watched the Titanic sink and all sorts of crazy stuff.
And all I've got to say is it was a real honor to have that book dedicated to me. It was the biggest honor that I've ever had.
That's right. Yeah, I dedicated that book to John. So,
cool.
I know. You know, and the real story is you told me that on the phone, and I said, well, great, thank you. And my internal voice said, now, I think that's what he said, but I'm not going to ask him again. And then he shipped me a copy, and I waited 2 days before I opened it. I said, was that really what he said? Surely it's not. And I swear it was. So, John LeMay, thank you so much. It was wonderful having you on tonight. It was great having you on with the Scary Cast crew, minus Robin. Robin will be back next week. And by the way, May 24th, we have got Isaiah Grass, one of the top pop stars in the world, is going to be here. So be here for Isaiah Grass, May 24th. And everybody on WLSC, AM and FM, Loris, we thank you, and we'll see you next week on the one, there's only one, Scary Cast. Take care, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.